Hello, and welcome to the RPG Academy Show and Tell. Show and Tell is a show where we like to bring on somebody in the RPG space and talk about something cool they're working on. I'm Mo, and today we're talking to Jesse Bernanco, designer of the extraordinarily horrible Children of Raven's Hollow.
I'm Jesse Bernanco, and by day, I'm a professional video game developer. But like a lot of people, I design little role-playing games on the side. And we're talking about The Extraordinarily Horrible Children of Raven's Hollow, which is my storytelling card game about creepy children in sort of a gothic fairy tale village doing horrible, murderous things to both each other and the adults that inhabit this sort of light fantasy world.
Are you a parent, Jesse?
I am not.
Okay. That will help kind of manage the tone of this conversation. I'm not a mandatory reporter, so that's probably good. Before we get started talking about your game, what got you into game design?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I have always done some game stuff. Back in college, I was focused on kind of the interactive fiction scene. And then when I got out of college, I was met with some frustrations from sort of the more narrative focused computer stuff. So I decided to get back into RPGs. I encountered The Forge, which at the time was very much into very experimental stuff with RPGs. And I got very excited about the broader possibilities of the medium. And so I've been, you know, experimenting with various topics and interests that I have, you know, in fiction and in media that I don't see reflected a lot in games. And so I try to do stuff that's, you know, relevant to my aesthetic interests, I guess I would call it.
Nice. And just for fun, can you explain to our listeners who might not know what The Forge was?
Sure. So The Forge existed from kind of like 2000 to 2012-ish. And it was largely run by a man named Ron Edwards, but there were a couple other people involved in that. He wasn't the only one, but he was a major voice there. And it attracted a lot of people who were interested in doing alternative things with games, and in particular sort of really drilling down into like how games function and breaking them apart and coming up with, like, now that we kind of have like defined the pieces of how a game works, what does that mean we can do with it? And you got a lot of stuff like Ron's own game Sorcerer, you got Paul Sega's game My Life with Master, you had stuff like The Pool and Primetime Adventures, and you know, The Shadow of Yesterday's in there somewhere too. And it was all these games that sort of kind of challenged like a lot of what had sort of calcified in the RPG industry, either through D&D or through White Wolf and, you know, anything sort of adjacent there, Call of Cthulhu. When you look at those games, they all kind of have, even though their subject matter is very different, their sort of play structures have sort of calcified. And The Forge was kind of all about, you know, in some ways sort of challenging that and coming up with new and different ways of thinking about how do we do this thing that we like doing.
Nice. Thank you. And just for our audience, that was the concise answer. Because this, like, I stumbled upon The Forge like maybe 5 years after it was all kind of over, and you know, I came back into the hobby after not playing Champions in D&D for about 15 years, and just quite aware that people were doing a really interesting different thing with games. And I was like, where did this come from? Like, and I start kind of digging into the archives of The Forge, and, you know, people kept referencing The Forge. And so, you know, at a certain point I did a little archaeological dig through and kind of, yeah, it was a very interesting thing. Were you exposed to that while it was happening?
Oh, yeah. I was there from probably its second or third year in.
Wow.
And yeah. And actually, a man named Bill White actually wrote it's actually an academic book. So it's kind of expensive to acquire because he sells it through, you know, an academic means. And I read that and it was very surprising to me to see the whole timeline laid out in, you know, precise detail. And I suddenly realized that like I was most active between like 2000 and 2006. So about the halfway point, I was still paying attention to like its second half, but I suddenly realized how like how much of what I remembered about it was actually in the first half of its existence. Right. You know, it was a really surprising read.
All right. That's an interesting rabbit hole, but we didn't come here to talk about that.
No,
we came here to talk about, your game, The Extraordinarily Horrible Children of Raven's Hollow, with a mouthful of a name. What kind of feels are we going to get playing this game?
So it's largely inspired by stuff like the works of Edward Gorey or Roman Dirge's Lenore comics. So we're talking about dark, humorous. It is meant to be kind of funny. Material about creepy children, doing sort of, you know, gallows humor-esque terrible things to one another. An example actually that I have in the game text is there's a location called the Leaning Lighthouse, and one of the children is attempting to scale the Leaning Lighthouse while another child is actually attempting to pull it down like the Leaning Tower of Pisa with a rope, right, over the treacherous waves of the ocean, right? And so it's stuff like that, right? It's meant to kind of feel like a series of short, like every turn of the game is kind of meant to feel like five or six panels of a dark, creepy comic. Mm-hmm. In the text, I actually refer to each turn as a vignette. It is almost a complete little story unto itself, and it's a sequence of these vignettes. So I mean, if you like, you know, humorous dark fairy tales, that's kind of what we got going on.
And just to be clear, are the players playing children?
They are.
Okay. Okay.
Are. Yeah. For the first half of the game, there's a thing that happens. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So what happens at the turn?
So it's a player elimination game. your children, there's three things that can happen to your child. They can die at the hands of another child. They can be captured by the adults, which are not player characters. The adults are sort of NPCs. But if they're captured by the adults, they are sent off to the orphanage. They're banished. Because it's a card game, if you run out of cards in your hand, you can become a lost child. You're forever lost in the woods, never to be found again. So when you're eliminated, you do keep playing. Your child is out of the game, but you take on the role of a raven. And the ravens have a completely different set of things they can do with their cards and moves that greatly influence the game. So there kind of becomes this tone shift between creepy children doing things to each other, and the creepy children can also do things to the adults as well.
Right. But
as the children dwindle and you get more and more ravens who can influence the game more and more, it sort of becomes about, it's like me, all my games are ultimately about guilt and judgment. So even this lighthearted game about children, creepy goth children, ultimately is about who do the ravens judge to be the worst of the children, right? Like, because the ravens can start influencing the outcome because there's kind of a win condition. Like if you're last child standing, you win. But to be last child standing, you kind of need the raven players to kind of be on your side.
Gotcha.
So if the ravens hate you, you're not going to win. So there's kind of this thing about, there's kind of a social game of being the most charming, horrible child.
Okay.
The most sympathetic, horrible child.
So when we think about role-playing games, we often don't think about win conditions and winning. Usually winning is a collaborative group effort. So you've said that there's a win condition. You've said that there are cards, mm-hmm. heaven forbid. is this an RPG?
I call it a storytelling card game. When you play it, I always, you know, if I run into cons, I put it on an RPG schedule. I do not put it on a board game schedule or anything like that, because there is narrative content that goes with every action. On a turn, if you're a child at the beginning of the game, you have a choice of either going after another child or going after one of the NPC adults. Cool. And basically the first card that gets played in any exchange, there's locations on that card. So depending on the rule, whoever plays that first card in the exchange has to set the scene there. They have to say like, oh, well, you know, I'm playing the Leaning Lighthouse or the Mausoleum or something. And they say what their child is doing in that location, or if it's an adult scene, what the adult is doing in that location. And then they have to describe, because again, I kind of think of it as almost like a comic book, like what do we see the creepy child doing to the other creepy child or to the adult, right? And then there's something I call a mayhem phase, where everybody has the ability to sort of jump in and possibly interfere with that action. And they're playing cards, or in some cases they play cards if it's an adult scene on behalf of the adult. And when that happens, they narrate what they're doing. They either narrate what their child is doing, you know, jumping into the scene, or what the adult is doing. So you get this sort of, again, each sequence is a vignette. You end up with a complete story about a child either trying to murder an adult or trying to do something terrible to another child, and the child either escapes. And then the same thing happens with the Raven's turns. The Ravens have like six things they can do, or five things they can do, and each one develops the story in a different way. In fact, the Ravens actually end up, a lot of the Raven moves actually end up developing a lot about the adults. So as the children go away, the adults get more active because the Ravens start doing things with the adults. And things can quite, can get quite bleak from the adult perspective. There's sort of a random component where you draw like which adults you're dealing with. But there was one game I remember where we kept drawing the blacksmith, and over the course of the game, the blacksmith kind of took almost this like PI like role. Like we called him Detective Blacksmith because he was going to find out what these children were up to. And then, you know, the kids killed him. They took out Detective Blacksmith. I consider it a role-playing game because quite honestly, the achieving the win condition through real strategy and play, it isn't going to happen. The game's not structured that way. You can't win intentionally. You really can't. It's too chaotic. It's too random. There's too many other factors. Again, Ravens basically have like powers to just kind of decide who wins if they really wanted to. So it's really more about developing this series of ever increasingly dark vignettes about this horrible village and the tragedy that is occurring there. Again, hopefully humorously. I mean, every game I've ever played has been funny from, you know, a dark humor perspective.
So I have played For the Queen, which is a really weird, interesting card game where you literally develop, you don't even start with the character's name. You just, you start playing cards and you develop your character as the cards are playing. And unlike a lot of role-playing games where, you know, you, after you create your character, you do all these actions. For the Queen asks you if you do one of two actions, you know, do you defend the Queen or not? How do the players show up and play your game? Without getting too deep into the crunchy mechanics of it all, like how does a player come to the table and use the cards to play your game?
Okay, so there are pre-created children cards. So you just get handed. You either can pick or get deal them randomly. Sometimes I deal them randomly. And they have a name and they have kind of a shtick, which gives them a little bit of a feel. One set of them, for example, is there's actually one card. So it's for one player, but they actually play a set of twins. And so they have the ability to sort of act as two characters, even though they're one unit of, right? So you get a child character with a bit of, with an evocative name and an evocative ability. And then that you can kind of formulate your idea around who that must be. And then you just sort of launch right into it. There's three starting adults to, you know, they're always in play at the beginning. So going after adults is always an option right away. Going after another child is always an option right away. And that's really the only two things you can do, right? You can either go like, I'm going to do something horrible to adults, or I'm going to do something horrible to another player. Usually shyer players who are not quite ready to jump into punching each other will go after the adults. there's a lot, right? That's the safe option. You're not going to anger any other players by going after an adult, right? Because they're NPCs, right? So essentially you can lump in, you can jump right into the PvP option, or you could go for an NPC, which always feels a little like a softer opening move, right? Nobody cares if you go after, you know, the butcher. And then from there, the game is very narratively structured. So you know on everything you do what to say. Oh, I play my opening card. My opening card has a location. I'm going after an adult. So I say what the adult does there and I say what I'm doing. And then every player in turn, because there's one go around, again, can play. There's mechanics for interfering. And when you do, you just narrate how you interfere, right? So it's very, very structured, again, in the beginning.
I haven't heard you say, and then they roll dice yet.
No, they never roll dice. They never
roll dice. Okay.
Yeah, it's all in the card play, because the cards that they play that have locations on them also have numbers on them. Mm-hmm. And those numbers are how you determine the outcome. Gotcha. So when you do have a hand of cards, and you play the cards from your hand, and they kind of do double duty. They both frame where the action is happening, and they are used to actually resolve the action within the scene.
Gotcha.
So it is entirely a card-based game. It feels like playing a card game mechanically, right? Like, I have a hand of cards. I play cards. I make choices about the cards. But ultimately, you're then building this narrative on top of it. And the reason that I feel that matters, because I've played games where you sort of narrate things on top of games, and I think to myself, like, we could just play this game, and we don't actually have to do the storytelling bit, is because of that later half, which is, the ravens have to like you. So your narrative matters, because that's going to highly inform how the raven players treat you later.
Gotcha.
Right. Like, if they have no basis for which to form their judgments and opinions as ravens, right, then the game doesn't work. Right.
So it sounds like you're specifically designing so that if I am harsh with you, with the adults early in the game, you might be harsh with me as a raven later in the game.
Correct. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. It's a game designed to
provoke pettiness,
but also to almost soften pettiness, because it's like, if you're really vicious in this game, you're just going to have the ravens come down on you so hard later. Right. So there's this incentive. Again, I call it to be like, I actually say in the rule book that being a psychopathic murderous child directly is not a good idea. Right. I've had games go that way, especially in the later stage, but at that point, it does feel like a frenetic, like it feels more justified later in the game, where it's like, no, I really just pull out a dagger and murder you at this point because we have all this context. But in general, the game is designed, it is supposed to be the children doing almost prank-like things without understanding that the consequences are lethal, right? Like, that's the gag, right? The gag is, oh, wouldn't it be funny if I push you down the well, not realizing you're going to drown down there?
Right.
Wouldn't it be funny if I, you know, if I happen to pull down this lighthouse, not realizing you're actually climbing it, right? Like
sounds like it's kind of got a Looney Tunes-esque.
Yeah. Right. And so that that makes the later game, it's like, oh, well, you know, you did pull out a dagger and start stabbing people. Like, you deserve everything you get. But all you ever did was, like, you know, try to paint your paintings and everybody kept slipping and falling and dying on your paint, right? You know, that's not completely your fault, right? So there's this element of trying to do, be horrible and vicious without being overly direct about it. Again, sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Sometimes it gets incredibly directly vicious, but usually everybody's into it at that point and they're like, they're fine. Like, especially if like ravens turn on them, they're like, yeah, I so deserve that.
Is there a GM in this game?
No. Yeah. It is entirely turn-based. Players play their children when they're, you know, on their turn, when they're a child. They just play their ravens when they're a raven. And because every move has a very specific narrative context attached to it, there's never any need for, you know, an outside force, right? Because even the adult NPCs are played in specific ways by other players as part of whatever they're doing on the turn.
This is really interesting, Jesse. Again, I've played For the Queen. I've played a couple games that really lean into like almost cards as prompts to tell stories. Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of a game like this. I'm very intrigued. safety tools. So
oh boy.
So this game sounds really fun, and it sounds like kind of the goal is to go off the rails. I know that there's been a very strong tradition of safety tools in gaming lately. Do you have mechanics or guidelines in place so that things don't get offensive?
Yes and no. I will say this. One, what you can do on any turn is pretty constrained. So it's, you know, there's a pretty directive. The scene is about X, right? So you can't like bring in anything outside that. Now, obviously you could do something really, really horrible when attacking another child or attacking an adult or something like that. In some ways, the entire game is designed to be a safety tools because of that later judgment aspect. But I suppose somebody could come into the game and just not care. Mm-hmm. But you can't, in my opinion, you can't really can't defend against bad faith players. I know we like to like kind of pretend that we can, but we really can't. So I don't necessarily have any particular safety tools built in it. I think between the raw instruction, the actual rules, the actual flow of the game from a social perspective has taken that into account from a design perspective. However, the game is not going to break if you bring your personal favorite safety tool to the table. If you would like more communication, because the game is still about communication, right? You still have to talk about things. You still have to discuss mm-hmm. things, right? If you're somebody who is more comfortable with having a formal communication mechanism like the, you know, X card or the traffic light system some people use, the game is not going to break if you do that. That's perfectly fine. In some ways, every game I've played, that's just happened anyways, right? Somebody's been like, can we not like just stab each other? And somebody goes, oh yeah, okay, fine, right? Like, I mean, that basically just is using the X card without having the X card on the actual table, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. right? So I am not, from a design perspective, I take the social, you know, structure into account in every game I design. I designed very specifically to a specific type of communication for each game. So therefore, I am not particularly inclined to write whole sections about safety tools or safety in general, because I trust players. I, you know, have faith in the communicative structures of my own games. But I understand there are people who are, you know, more comfortable with something more formal. And bringing those formal, there's nothing in this game that is antithetical to bringing those formal structures in. If you want them, if you're more comfortable using them, the game would be perfectly fine. There's nothing that's going to break because you have this additional, you know, communication technique on the table. So yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
Okay. Yeah. I know that, some days I'm very compelled to play, a character that is a bad faith actor, you know, and, the idea of playing traumatizing children, it sounds really fun, you know, in certain circumstances. I do know that, you know, in some games I've played, you know, some people have said, I don't want to play a game that has, you know, harm against children. Some people say, I don't want to play a game that has, like, eyeball trauma, you know, right. Some people say, I don't want spiders in my game. And, you know, if you don't want trauma against children, this isn't the game for you. No. And that's absolutely fair.
I mean, the game, because there's something, I mean, that's the game's premise. The game's premise is, and so you're going to buy in on turn one or not, right? On turn one, you're going to be like, yeah, we're totally down with creepy children doing terrible things to each other. It's interesting because, you know, I've played the game quite a bit. The game started like 10 years ago. And I've taken it to cons. I've played it with strangers. I've played it with friends. I've played it in large. It can support, unusual for an RPG, it can support up to 10 players. And I've played it with 10 people. I've played it with 4 people. And it usually goes pretty well. I have yet to see somebody really freak out. Right, it's usually kept on the level of, you know, grim humor. Isn't it funny? Occasionally, some child will decide that there's some light fantasy elements. Like one of the cards is like a stone altar in the woods or a fairy circle or something like that. So there's been games where one child has just decided that there's some kind of sorcerer and they're just going to straight up sacrifice other children like on the altar to dark gods. But I have never seen that in a way that hasn't been clearly Adam's Family-esque, right? Like,
right,
isn't this funny, right? Like, isn't it funny this child has decided they are dark sorcerer, right? And then, you know, again, usually the ravens take care of that pretty quick. They're like, oh, dark sorcerer child, great. Or they'll back the dark sorcerer child. I mean, sometimes that happens too, where they're like, yes, we are the raven servants of the dark sorcerer's child. You know, that's that fun of the second half of the game. Once you have more ravens in play, it's all about, you know, who the raven's gonna back, you know, who the ravens.
It sounds like you have a very interesting game here, Jesse. Okay, let me ask the dumb question. Is there an AP or like audio or video of a playthrough of this game?
No, available? I have never done that. I would like to do that. It's a little hard because if you play it online, you have to use like Tabletop Simulator or something like that, which doesn't particularly record very well. So I think, you know, to do that, I'd have to do something in person. Which is also then, you know, the logistics of recording an in-person thing. I'd love to have a recording of this game as an example, as, you know, just a fun, I think it's well suited to recording too, because it's so structured and it's so tight. Like every turn is exciting, right? Like, cause it's these, again, I almost say it's not one story, it's a series of stories, right?
Right.
You know, that go all in one volume of a comic, right? It's this series of little vignettes. But I'd love to do that.
Interesting. If people is the game available?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Okay. How could people get their hands on this?
It's available on my itch page. Currently, it's set up to be print and play. It's real easy to print out the rules. It's real easy to print out the cards and just, you know, cut them up and put a deck together. It's about 72 cards altogether. I am currently setting up, making it available on Drive-Thru, which will have print-on-demand options for the cards and for the rule book, but that always takes time because the proof process and all that stuff. So I expect that to be up there in a few weeks, but it is all set up there. But yes, it's available right now on my itch page as a very, very printer friendly. Everything is, you know, minimal black and white, specifically for that, for people to just be able to print and play right out of the gate.
Nice. And do you have like a Discord or any place you tend to hang out where people could kind of come and be in community around this game?
I technically have a private Discord. I don't know how much I want random people showing up.
Fair enough.
Let me ask this question again then.
Okay. Do you have a Discord where people can come and be in community around this game?
No.
Okay. How about social media or places on the interwebs where you tend to hang out?
Yeah, I'm on Blue Sky. I am on Dice Camp, the Mastodon server. I do technically still have my Twitter account. I don't use it much because of, you know, everything going on there. But yeah, Dice Camp and Blue Sky are probably the two places where I'm most active.
Cool. Well, I hope I get to play this game one day in the wild, Jesse. It really gives me feels to a actual card game with no role play that I played many, many moons ago called Lunch Money.
Oh.
Where you played British schoolgirls. Yeah. Hitting each other with pipes and axes and knives and punching and kicking.
I'm familiar with Lunch Money. Yeah, Lunch Money is a little more direct. I would say I have people, I don't know if you're familiar with this game, I have had people compare it to Gloom, card game.
It is much more favorite.
In some ways, it was also, the game was sort of designed as a reaction to Gloom, because I really like Gloom. And Gloom does the thing where it tells you, oh, you should narrate over your play. The problem is Gloom works too well as an actual card game, and you don't actually need to do that. Gloom is a fantastic little card game with sort of storytelling optional. I kind of set up the social structures of this game such that the storytelling isn't as optional as it is in Gloom.
Gotcha.
It's kind of a necessity, which is why I still classify it as an RPG. Like, it just doesn't function without the actual narrative component. It just wouldn't be fun or interesting.
Gotcha. Gloom's a great game to be compared to. So that's pretty cool. Thank you so much for your time, Jesse. This has been a very intriguing. It's been a good conversation about a very intriguing game.
Well, good. I hope you get a chance. I hope you get a chance to play it, because maybe we can set up that actual play. You can be in it. You can be in it.
Let me know.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to the RPG Academy podcast. We do this show out of love for the hobby and the desire to be ambassadors, welcoming more people into this community. All of our website content will always be free to use and utilize, but there are expenses related to the show. And if you enjoy what we do here, then please consider supporting us in some way. You can do so as simply as rating or reviewing us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. If you're going to purchase anything through Amazon or DriveThruRPG, consider using our affiliate links first, and then we'll get a small percentage sent back to us. You can do a single direct donation through PayPal using the paypal.me/theRPGAcademy, or consider joining our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/theRPGAcademy. And for a donation as low as $1 a month, You'll get access to lots of extra goodies, including bonus minisodes, invites to monthly one-shot games, one-sheet adventures, and more. Please consider following us on Twitter and Facebook, or join our Discord, where we like to try to keep the conversation going with our fans as best we can, and are always looking to talk and chat more. Or do none of that. Just continue to listen and enjoy our show, because honestly, that's enough. Thanks, and remember, if you're having fun, you're doing it right. We'll see you next time. The music used for our intro and outro is Fly a Kite by Spectacular Sound Productions, used under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.